Now, back to the Eric Stewart Show on WMAL.
Many people through the years have found a vast amount of pleasure in the art of collecting. I like to collect art. That's what I enjoy. Collectors find pleasure in gathering things for a number of different reasons. And you might simply enjoy the items that you're collecting. People sometimes collect because they think that it's going to increase in value. Regardless of the reasons for collecting, there are really just three things that you need to know. Number one, acquiring the item is not the only expense involved. There are what I call implied commitments to buying anything. So remember, when making a purchase, most people just look at the item's price tag and don't think about the cost of owning and preserving that item, insuring that item. Once the purchase is made, you got to consider storing it, preserving, regular maintenance, the insurance. And if you decide to sell the item, the cost of packing, shipping, possible commissions, those all should be considered. So if an item is not in high demand, it could also be difficult to sell or might not sell at all in a soft market. Number two, the appraisal value is different from the market value. What you get something appraised for and what you can actually get cash for are often two different things, right? I know I've got artwork that I bought back in the late 1980s. It was by Thomas McKnight. Thomas McKnight is a very famous artist. His prints were selling for, you know, $1,000 for a print signed and numbered. And it came with a certificate of authenticity and an appraisal from this dealer that I bought it from. And I was single and had money to burn at the time. And, you know, I bought it and I thought it was beautiful and I liked the look of it. And so I bought it. Well, the appraisal that I got with it said that it was already worth $3,500 just a month after it was issued. And I paid $1,000. You know, what's not to like about that? I felt like I had something of real value. Well, in fact, to sell that item, I probably would sell it for $400 or $500. I don't think I'd get anything more from that even now 25 years later. So the cost of actually getting something, the appraised value and the resale value are all three different things, right? So, all right. Number three, you need to enjoy it while you have it. Here again, I bought a piece of art and it was by Erte. And Erte was an Art Deco guy from the 1920s and 30s who passed away in, I think, early 1990s. But he created art that was all very Art Deco in style. And I bought a print being told the same thing. And, I paid about the same amount of money. And they told me, he ends up passing away. And all of a sudden, his art is worth, quote, more money. Now, it is desirable and it does sell well because he's gone and he was a master of Art Deco. But what the appraised value and what the resale value, there's probably a 2/3 discrepancy between them. All right. So you just need to, and you know what? And here's the thing is I didn't really like the piece that much. So I owned something I really didn't like looking at. And I decided after that, from now on, I'm just going to buy art that I really enjoy looking at. I fell in love with a modern American impressionist fall in love with his artwork, right? Guy's name is Howard Behrens, recently passed. He was an impressionist that painted with a palette knife, and he was in Wentworth Studio and other places around the Beltway. Great artist. And then I moved into Russian art, ended up spending some time in Russia back in the early 90s, and then moved into American illustrator art in the Howard Pyle School. So great artists like Howard Pyle and N.C. Wyeth and Gail Hoskins, to name just a few, Dean Cornwell. So my tastes have moved on in time. What I can actually sell something for, just remember when you collect, like you've probably moved through a process, like I moved through different tastes and then developed what I really want to do. You just need to know what you're going to actually be able to get for something and whether there's long-term demand. In light of these online sellable means, like we talked about earlier in the show today, things like Yadros, China, silver plate, things like this that at one point was very regionally available, meaning people would buy it at a local store that sold Yadro, and Yadro had a controlling contract with those people, and then there was just only a few available at any given time. Now that stuff is on the web, and it's out there for everybody. And so the Christmas plates the value of many things has drifted lower. And so keeping those things isn't necessarily going to increase its value because things were made in the thousands and thousands and thousands. One thing that puzzles me is comic books, because comic books were printed in thousands and thousands of copies, and yet Silver Age comics from the 60s and 70s have gone crazy. I mean, crazy in pricing for some comic books that are not like, it's not like Spider-Man number one or Batman number one. These are comic books from the 70s and the 80s that are trading for hundreds of dollars a piece. But the demand is there and people are holding it. So it's a supply and demand issue. And at some point, you know, there will be more supply than there is demand, meaning more people will sell them than there are people willing to buy them. Who knows when that will happen? Just be aware of it. Three consequences of collecting. You need to know what you're doing before you buy it. The implied commitment of ownership isn't just limited to collecting things. It's anything that we buy. It's the food that we buy at the store that we need to put into the refrigerator, that we need to clean our fridge. It's the magazines that we buy that we never read and then collect over time, and the feeling of, I got to get to that. I've just gone through incredible purge in my office and at home, and it's just been so freeing as I've just decided, give. Let me just free up my life the way that I preach to you guys about doing it, right-sizing my life. I don't need to own all that I have. I can take pictures of the things I've had for a long time that remind me of things I've done in the past. I don't need to own it. In fact, I would just as soon have less. Maybe you're at that point. It's time to have less or just to downsize or whatnot. And you know, I'm specializing in that very particular downsizing process for people. You can download a free guide now. We've put this on our website. You can download it right to your computer, free of charge. Those of you without computers, don't worry. I'm going to give you a toll-free number you can call, and we'll mail you a copy too. That is ericstewartgroup.com. Go to the free guide section. It's ericstewartgroup.com or toll-free 1-800-900-9104. That's our toll-free number, 1-800-900-9104. In just 3 or 4 minutes from now, you'll hear another segment of our delightful radio story called Senior Moments, which is all about younger kids taking mom and dad through the process of downsizing. It's a hoot. Last week we started and we had a lot of fun discovering the father-son relationship and the son trying to broach the conversation with dad. Hey, the house might just be too much. So this week, we'll see what mom thinks about the idea of making a move. Hey, every real estate agent by October the 3rd needs to be aware of three very significant changes in the real estate business. Number one, good faith estimates and truth in lending disclosures are now going to be combined into a three-page form called the loan estimate, or LE. The loan estimates must be delivered to the borrower within 3 business days of taking a loan application. The intent of the LE is to provide borrowers with the lender's costs as accurately as possible upfront, within 3 days of application. Number two, the closing disclosure. This is another major form integration that's going to replace what we call the HUD-1 settlement statement. And the final TIL disclosure, it replaces it with what's called the CD, or the closing disclosure. This is a new 5-page CD, closing disclosure, that must be delivered to the borrower at least 3 business days prior to closing. The days of the one-day delivery requirements for the HUD-1 are now behind us. Changes in the loan terms could trigger an additional 3-day waiting period, even with the bona fide financial emergency exception. Meaning, if a closing disclosure is not delivered early enough prior to closing, it will delay the closing. And there's going to be, in my estimation, 20-30% of the transactions that are slated to close in October, November, and December are going to have some kind of a delay as we walk through the process of getting this done correctly. Number three, less information to apply for a loan. Love this. Under the new TILA and RESPA ruling, a loan application is defined as the collection of just 6 items. The borrower's name, Social Security, income, property address, estimate of property value, and a mortgage loan amount. The catch-all seventh item is no longer required to complete the mortgage application. Catch-all meaning that there was another provision that allowed the lender to keep asking for everything under the sun. These rules apply to most mortgages with the exception of home equity lines of credit. Okay? All right. Hey, another quick break. Senior Moments right after this.